Blog Talk Radio. One of the 50s movies, he died today. Among the events today, ASCAP was started in 1914 at the American Society of Composers, Authors, and Publishers, and they try to protect the copyrights of music composers and lyricists. In 1949, Billy Graham, who's still alive, I understand, Harry Truman hated this guy. He started his ministry from North Carolina. And Billy Graham, Harry Truman couldn't stand him. Harry Truman was a Baptist drinking bourbon. He liked bourbon, but he couldn't stand Billy Graham, whose son has now taken over, quote, the ministry, and every president has paid court to Billy Graham, except Harry Truman. In 1959, one of the biggest pieces of political and criminal law fiction went on TV, The Untouchables. This was pushed by, Anyway, it's about Elliot Ness, who supposedly brought down Al Capone. And Walter Winchell was the author of this. It was a great piece of fiction. We used to watch it in black and white TV when I was in school. But it's not true, because Al Capone was brought down by a little accountant named Elmer Urey, who was worked for the Treasury Department, and they got a hold of Al Capone's books and found he was evading income tax. And that's how they brought Al Capone down, not by Elliot Ness going around smashing stills and illegal whiskey brought in from Canada. In 1966, back to the federal government, the U.S. Department of Transportation was started by LBJ, and now they've taken over checking people into the airports, and also they check you out when you want to ride a train. I didn't know that when I took a train down south. Among the, and this is Supreme Court information today, 1956, William Brennan, who was a Catholic judge from New Jersey, President Eisenhower appointed him to the U.S. Supreme Court, and he recently died, I think. And then, of course, in 1991, Bush appointed Clarence Thomas to succeed the black seat, and of course there was a lot of controversy with Anita Hill, who some people think she lied. So that was that on that date. Now we have the tomorrow we have another debate, presidential debate between aspirant Mitt Romney and Mr. O, who's currently the occupant in the White House, and we shall see what we shall see, and we'll probably play an excerpt from one of the Kennedy-Nixon debates, which are probably the best debates, and with the first debates of a presidential candidate and a vice president who wanted to be president. Among the things that are not talked about, the pundits focus on Ohio. You've got the challenger or whoever wants to be elected for a second term has to take Ohio. But nobody's looking at another fact in U.S. history, and that is the tallest man theory in presidential elections. Guess who the tallest man is? It's Mitt Romney. So we shall see if that theory holds up. The gay propagandists who talk about the White House and who was the first gay to occupy it, they claim that Lincoln was the first gay president, but that seems to be wishful thinking or political fantasy. If anybody was the first gay president, it would probably be James Buchanan, whose vice president was, shared a lodging with, I think it was William Rufus Duvain King, who died, he lasted 30 days, he died of the fever in Cuba, and they roomed together, and James Buchanan, who was the only president elected from Pennsylvania, the 15th president, never married. A woman he liked or loved was, she died early, and also James Buchanan was the minister to the court of St. James when Victoria was queen, and she remarked that James Buchanan was the prettiest man she ever laid eyes on, and of course she had a thing about men. One of her husband, Prince Albert, was one of the most handsome men in Europe at the time, and he later died of, I think, typhoid fever or something. But, of course, we don't know if James Buchanan was gay, and it's speculation. There's no writings, no love letters. But, you know, again, the propagandists have got to say something. Now, Lincoln was accused by these propagandists of being gay because that he shared a bed when he was traveling as a lawyer with Joshua Speed, who was a good-looking guy. They were law partners, and in those days, there wasn't Hotel 5 or Holiday Inn or any of that. And there was, you know, how many young men share a bed, and not have sex, which is what the propagandists imply and accuse Lincoln and others. But in those days, a lot of people shared a bed, and there was no sex or anything like that. It was just you didn't want to sleep on the floor or sleep in the stable with your horses. Now, one of the things we hear about, which is another political fiction, is Project Censor, which is some outfit up in Sonoma County, which is also in the northern counties of California, are also some of the biggest pot-growing regions. And some of us think that these people smoke something when they come up with these Project Censored. Project Censored, it seems to be focusing on what is politically correct and what is politically incorrect in their eyes is never reported. But here are some of the things that we think are real Project Censored. Did you know that the reactors at Fukushima were reportedly sold by General Electric and they were obsolete or defective? That's one of the questions. Another question about the nuclear reactor and these nuclear reactor stations, there's reportedly aluminum used in some of the piping, which is very dangerous when that stuff melts. And, of course, we're still feeling around the world, we're still feeling the after effects over a year later of the Fukushima disaster. And we don't know how much longer this is going to go on, and also how many bad reactors were sold to utility companies here in America, and how many of these companies are using aluminum on their pipes. This is a very serious question. Another real Project Censored issue is the so-called affordable housing. And this is HUD-subsidized housing supposedly low-income people, but they don't talk about how these deals are set up by employees of various city governments, and the employees set up secret and limited partnerships which enable them to take over the project, which they don't put a cent in, or in one case, a woman who used to work for HUD put in $100 on a $10 million project. She has made so much money on this project. Helen Helfer used to work for HUD, has since retired to Pricey, Cape Cod, Massachusetts. And the project costs $10 million. She puts up $100 and eventually, because of the limited partnership, will own the whole damn project. And that's not too far off. Incidentally, it was built on a hill where there's two rivers running underneath, and allegedly, nuclear waste was buried there after World War II, the nuclear waste from Oak Ridge when they built the atomic bomb. This is really outrageous. Here in San Francisco, we have a potential love canal, an atomic or nuclear love canal. And another politically incorrect project, real Project Censored, is we don't know about some of these judges who were appointed. In fact, we rarely know about these people until their names crop up very reluctantly in the news. We don't know their background. We don't know if they're even U.S. citizens. For instance, we have a nominee to the federal bench here in the Ninth Circuit. His name is John Teagar, born in England. We don't know if he ever became a U.S. citizen, yet he's become controversial, and he has been nominated to the Ninth Circuit District Court. We're hearing that he abuses military servicemen who come into his court in Alameda, and a lot of questions about his suitability or fitness to be on Ninth Circuit or be on any court. And it's not only him, it's other judges, Angela Bradstreet, who is a British lesbian, who's got friendly with Schwarzenegger. She got appointed to the San Francisco County bench, and a woman who doesn't know what she's doing, obviously, but she made her name by trying to intimidate all of the legal professionals in the state of California, telling them that they should not be funding the American Boy Scouts because the American Boy Scouts supposedly try to prevent predators in pup tents. And, of course, the Boy Scouts, like the Roman Catholic Church and other churches, have been hit with a lot of lawsuits because they have failed to protect their charges from sexual predators. Yet this woman, you know, she's never been married, doesn't have any kids, and yet she's trying to bully people, and this is what happens. Now, another thing that is not reported in Project Censor or even in the news is that lesbians in America want political power, and they'll do anything and have done anything to get it. And we see this here in California, where they're engaged in vote fraud, intimidation, trying to seduce young girls with these slumber parties. This happened in the San Francisco school district where I worked as a volunteer, a lecturer, and at their radio station. So these are a couple of things, and we'll continue with what is a real Project Censor in the coming shows. Here's an update on this U.S. Marine Oral Stewart, who is from Iowa, 18-year-old kid, who has recently identified after 34 years. He was murdered down in Long Beach, California. His nude body indicated there was some S&M involved, was found in the parking lot, I believe, of a condominium. And they're trying, the Long Beach police are trying to figure out, who killed him. And we don't know if it was one of the sexual predators up here in Northern California who used to travel down to Southern California, but who had a police record of raping young males and who preyed on young military personnel. I'm losing my throat again. Excuse me. So I think this is appropriate. Let's just play some of our archives. Here's a audio clip on what is the ideal republic.
I can conceive of a national destiny which meets the responsibilities of today and measures up to the possibilities of tomorrow. Behold a republic resting securely upon the mountain of eternal truth. A republic applying in practice and proclaiming to the world the self-evident propositions that all men are created equal, that they're endowed with inalienable rights, that governments are instituted among men to secure these rights, and that governments derive their just powers from the consent of the governed. Behold a republic in which civil and religious liberty stimulate all to earnest endeavor, and in which the law restrains every hand uplifted for a neighbor's injury. A republic in which every citizen is a sovereign, but in which no one cares to wear a crown. Behold a republic standing erect while empires all around are bowed beneath the weight of their own armaments. A republic whose flag is love, while other flags are only fear. Behold a republic increasing in population, in wealth, in strength, and in influence, solving the problems of civilization and hastening the coming of a universal brotherhood. A republic which shakes thrones and dissolves aristocracies by its silent example and gives light and inspiration to those who sit in darkness. Behold a republic gradually but surely becoming the supreme moral factor in the world's progress and the accepted arbiter of the world's disputes. A republic whose history, like the path of the just, is as the shining light that shineth more and more unto the perfect day.
Well, I think that was William Jennings Bryan, part of our archives. And I think, you know, they don't give speeches like that today. In fact, a lot of these guys should take elocution lessons. And I remember my professor, who also taught Kim Novak, talking about the poor state of oratory today. But, you know, TV has changed a lot of that, and we've seen people who look beautiful on TV, but they sound so illiterate, or they're engaging in tactics like Joe Biden did the other day. You don't sneer and do those things with your opponent, but you attack his position, and you do it like a gentleman and a true orator, not like a barroom brawler, which is beneath the dignity of the office of vice president, no matter who's occupying it. So this is unfortunate. But then again, you know, We don't have the quality of statesmen, or real statesmen like Churchill or Charles de Gaulle, people like that. It's unfortunate. But, and even FDR was a great speaker. Teddy Roosevelt. We don't have anything that I have in our archives him actually speaking, because audio was not as developed as it is now. But now, you know, somebody's got something somewhere, as it were. So let us end up today. Because I'm having trouble with Skype also. I'm not real happy with Skype. I was going to play Marilyn Monroe, but I think we'll pass. And now we have the issue of the first black president. It's interesting what Woodrow Wilson said on that, because Harding succeeded him. And we'll play that. Harding's birthday is next month, and he's a fascinating guy. He's always fascinated me. So we will bring that up. And, excuse me, we will bring up a lot of stuff about Harding. He, just one thing, he did start the Bureau of the Budget. He may have been a slob. He may have been screwing around at the, in the White House with women that weren't his wife. I mean, you know, we got Kennedy, we got FDR, and, you know, other people as well. You know, people make mistakes, people do things, I guess, as, so long as they don't make a career out of it. But, we'll be bringing those up. And let's play this from Robert LaFollette, since we may have a vice president from Wisconsin. Robert LaFollette was part of the real progressive movement in America. The progressives were Fiorello LaGuardia. We had senator from what was it, South Dakota, and a couple others. And these were the, these were not the, the progressives, quote, that you hear today. The progressives you hear today are people who are were in the closet as communists, or the young ones who don't know what the hell, you know, progressivism is. And people like Hiram Johnson was governor of California at the turn of the, around the 20s. And these were people who wanted public power, who were for keeping Indians on reservations. They were for closing red light districts. They were for limited immigration. And, you know, in a sense, a lot of these people were racist. But these were people who adopted the title and embraced the politics of the progressivism of the 19th century. The progressives that you hear today are really closet communists. Now, after World War II, the American Communist Party went into the political closet and came out labeled progressives. Well, you know, they're frauds, and they're, that's a political fiction. But I think since we hear so much from Ryan from Wisconsin, there are a lot of Ryans in politics and in the church. I think Robert LaFollette, who was a Republican also, who ran for president, I think this is apropos that every citizen must do his duty.
America. America is not made. It's in the making. It has today to meet an impending crisis, menacing as any in the nation's history. It does not call a sound to arms, but it is nonetheless a call to patriotism and to higher ideals in citizenship. The patriotic citizenship of the country must take its stand and demand of wealth that it shall conduct its business lawfully, that it shall no longer furnish the most flagrant examples of persistent violation of statutes while invoking the protection of the courts, that it shall not destroy the equality of opportunity, the right to the pursuit of happiness guaranteed by the Constitution, that it shall keep its powerful hands off from legislative manipulation, that it shall not corrupt, but shall obey the government that guards and protects its rights. Mere passive citizenship is not enough. Men must be aggressive for what is right if government is to be saved from those who are aggressive for what is wrong. There is work for everyone. The field is large. It is a glorious service, this service for the country. The call comes to every citizen. It is an unending struggle to make and keep government representative. Each one should count it a patriotic duty to build at least a part of his life into the life of his country, to do his share in the making of America according to the plan of the fathers.
Well, of course, when he talks about the fathers, he's talking about God. That's how they talked in those days. So we'll end today with our usual theme, politics and poker. We'll be back Wednesday. Go to our Amicus Veritas YouTube site, AMICUSVERITAS, and we'll end tonight with politics and poker.
What do you say, Ben? Want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bets.
Cost you five. Tony, up to you.
Okay, Tony, what are you going to do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Me too. Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year.
Big ace.
Ace bets.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where's the plan?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Impulse.
Possible straight, possible flush. Nothing.
Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
How's about we should make Jack Riley the guy?
Which Riley are you thinking of, Jack B or Jack Y?
I say neither one. I never even met him.
I say when you got a pair of Jack, bet up.
Politics and poker, shuffle up the cards and find the joker. These are games for children, he's a game is rough. Decisions, decisions, like
who to pick,
how to play, not to bet,
when the call comes up.
All right now, fellas, politics or poker, which is more important?
Paraphrase.
Bet 'em.
Little trade, good as gold.
I'll stay.
Raise your five.
I'll fall.
I'll hold.
I'll raise your back.
I think you're bluffing.
Put your money where your mouth is.
Okay, I'm in. Gentlemen, knock it off and let's get this done.
Try Michael Fudyashinkovich. I'm certain he'd run.
Mike is out. I'm afraid he just wouldn't sell. Nobody likes a candidate whose name they can't spell.
How about Dave Zimmerman?
Davey's too bright.
What about Walt Gustafson?
Walt died last night.
How about Frank Monahan?
What about George Gale?
Frank ain't a citizen and George is in jail.
We could run out Wallenstein.
He's only 23.
What about Ed Peterson?
You idiot! That's me!
Politics and...
Well, there's a lot of idiots in politics. We'll end tonight. We'll be back Wednesday. Go to our Amicus Veritas YouTube site. Good night.